First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
By the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, where you can go check out the most recent podcast of this show, as well as any stories we're doing on an investigation we've got going on. While you're there, please join our email newsletter at LouisvillePolitics.com. We'll make sure that you get everything delivered direct to your inbox on a weekly or a monthly basis, your choice. And also join the RSS feed, and we'll make sure you get a daily copy of the podcast of this show. If you're so inclined, we could always use the help. Please hit that little donate button on the right side of the page at the top there, and that will help us keep things going as always. In the meantime, I tell you, Ed Martin may or may not be here. He had some late work to do. It's just one of those things, you know, when you're running a business that Barack Obama built for you, sometimes you just got to take care of business. So he may or may not be here. He said he might be late if he makes it at all, depending on his delivery schedule. In the meantime, we have a whole lot to cover tonight. I tell you, I get more and more disturbed every single day. And there's a lot of reasons for it. But tonight we're going to start because Louisville Metro Police Department is making national news all of a sudden, and deservedly so. As everybody knows, I was illegally arrested a couple of years ago by Louisville Metro Police, and I didn't make that big of a deal out of it. Did I tell the whole world that they did an illegal arrest? Sure I did. I didn't do an article about it. Didn't really chastise Louisville Metro Police, just chastised two individual officers who made a dumb mistake by arresting me for no reason, which, of course, obviously I won my case, or we wouldn't be here. But, it's disturbing because we're making national news because of everything that just seems to be coming forward. Each and every day, there's an LMPD officer in trouble. Today it's reported that Officer Christopher Cowan, he's an 8-year veteran of LMPD, was arrested and charged with fourth-degree domestic assault. He was arrested over the weekend by Louisville Metro's Public Integrity Unit. You know, and this was confirmed by spokeswoman Officer Carrie Klain. Apparently, he had an incident with his girlfriend early Saturday morning at a local bar, and now he's on administrative reassignment, and his police powers have been suspended. What that means is he can't arrest you right now, but he's still getting paid. Even though this is an ongoing case, you're innocent until proven guilty. However, how many of us would still be in that position? This is, you know, this is the way it is. When I was arrested 2 years ago, I mean, it literally destroyed my life for quite a while. I mean, there was a situation where typically I work a job in addition to doing this, couldn't get hired. The background check was bad because of an illegal arrest by LMPD that they kept alive for well over a year. You know, and these guys, anytime something happens, they just go on paid administrative leave or something like that. If we, the general public, are charged with anything, it can destroy us. I mean, it destroyed me financially. You know, it's cost me a great deal on a personal level, money-wise, career-wise, you know, even with my personal family. You know, so there's a lot of things going on here that I don't like. So here's a guy, domestic assault. Bam, he's just been, had his police power suspended, but still getting paid because he's on administrative. You know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We've seen all kinds of things happening over the last week and a half. We had a veteran officer that was charged with shoplifting at least twice. Seriously, charged with shoplifting at least twice. I don't get this. We have another officer who's under investigation because there's a video of her assaulting a handcuffed woman who was already in custody for shoplifting, and she decided to kick her in the chest. You know, we've got another officer, James Hemmer, arrested for DUI and fleeing the scene of an accident. You know, then, of course, the biggest one is the complete violation of the Constitution. When we had some LMPD officers go into Cahoots Bar and tell every patron in there that they weren't allowed to leave until they were frisked. So they illegally detained and frisked every single customer in that bar. It's illegal, folks. You know, it's crazy. I just don't get all of this. Then we've got another cop. You know, he damages cruiser while driving under the influence, obviously. You know, he shot his weapon during a SWAT standoff at his home. A SWAT standoff at his home, folks. They called a SWAT team out for this cop. He shoots the gun inside the house, and he remains on the job. You know, last but June, Metro Officer Timothy Bowling admitted to drinking and driving twice in his cruiser over the last year. You know, this is some strange stuff. This is some strange stuff. None of us would be in this same situation. If no one is above the law, what in the hell is going on with LMPD? And I've got to be honest with you, I am very disturbed and very concerned, because this is an ongoing thing with these guys. I mean, all of a sudden, the police in this town have a badge, and they think they can do anything they want. Now, there's a lot of good officers out there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that every officer is a criminal or every officer is a bad guy. I know quite a few officers that are good people. But to me, this truly is going above and beyond to have this many incidences all the time. It really is. This all started under former Chief Robert White. It all started under former Chief Robert White, and his idiot handpicked sleep to the top Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry was one of the people that are the problem, in my opinion. And a lot of people agree with that. You know, that's just the way it is. And then you got Kenton Buckner, who hasn't done anything. You know, this is disturbing. You know, I don't expect Chief Steve Conrad to patrol the streets every day. It's not his job. But when his lead assistant chiefs and everything else aren't doing their job, this is what you have. And don't tell me that it's not related. I don't buy that. In any organization, the attitude reflects leadership. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are or where you work. If you start having a consistent problem with multiple people, it's because attitude reflects leadership. The people who are handling the day-to-day operations of LMPD on the most basic level at the top would have to be the deputy chiefs. That's what they're there for. And they're not doing their job, clearly. Attitude reflects leadership. So for all these guys who continue going through here and having all these problems, this is more than just an isolated incident. We continue to see more and more of this progressing. Now, maybe a lot of it has to do with the fact that we now have cell phones and we have more opportunity to catch these kind of things and put them on YouTube. Maybe this is just business as usual. I don't know. But I do know that we have a serious, severe disconnect between those who are supposed to protect and serve and the public who are supposed to trust them in that capacity. This is disturbing. And folks, we need to start paying attention and start asking questions. And I think it's high time that we take everything out of Public Integrity Unit's hands. They don't do their own investigations anymore. I think it's high time for a civilian review board with investigative powers, subpoena powers if necessary. And I'm serious about that. But it's time for the public to hold the police accountable, the bad seeds. There's a hell of a lot of cops out there that do a good job, you know, that are falsely accused. We had a story coming out of California today. You know, an officer was on a burglary call to a firehouse. He goes to the firehouse. The door is open. There's two kids outside, ages 9 and 12. It's nighttime. You don't know what's going on. Kids are used as a lookout all the time for criminals. So he tells the kids to stay there, and about the time he's getting ready to go in, gentleman walks out, and he tells him to freeze, put his hands up. Guy puts his hands up, identifies himself, says, you know, I'm Mike Jones. I'm a fireman at this department house. You know, and those are my kids. You know, so the cop's trying to determine what's going on because he's got a burglary call. So after talking with the guy for a minute, he asked the guy to put his hands up as far as he could, turn around one time. That's the way, if he's got a jacket or anything on, you know, you can identify a weapon on him, right? And the guy didn't have one, so the officer told him to give him his identification, which he did. The officer goes back, runs the ID, everything's fine, comes out to apologize to the guy for detaining him. Should have been the end of the story. But guess what? It wasn't. This idiot firefighter falsely accused this officer of racism. The firefighter was a black man. The officer was a white man. The firefighter was coming back from an Oakland Raiders football game. He had parked his van or his vehicle in front of the firehouse. And as he went to his vehicle with his children, he saw that the firehouse garage door was wide open. Someone in the firehouse forgot to shut that door when they went out on a run. It's pitch black outside. He sees the door wide open. He decides to go in and investigate. Why did he leave his two kids outside like that? I have no idea. Why did he go in thinking he was going to accost whoever was in there if there was a robbery? I have no idea. He endangered himself. He endangered his kids. And instead of telling his kids that, he's now convinced his kids that police make targets of black men, all because the cop asked him what he was doing there. He lied and said the cop was low and crouched to the ground and had his weapon drawn and all this. The beauty of it is the cop had one of those cameras that you put on your chest, those little badge cameras, and it caught every bit of it, proved this firefighter was lying through his butt. This cop was about as nice and polite as you could be doing his job in that kind of a situation. The whole thing lasted about 2 minutes. There's a great video on YouTube on it. So we know there's a lot of good officers out there who are falsely accused. But to have this many officers, domestic violence, drunk driving, shooting weapons in a SWAT standoff, their own SWAT team, this is the tip of the iceberg. Illegally arresting people because they ask the name. They don't care about the First Amendment. They don't care about the Fourth Amendment by illegally detaining and searching customers at a bar that they have no right to do that to. We've got a serious problem here. And before it gets any worse, we need to take corrective action. I can't stress that enough. We the people need to rise up and demand accountability. As much as I like Chief Steve Conrad, and as much as I asked for Chief Steve Conrad to come here, I was one that supported him coming here. I know that he's stuck in a political situation, and he can never talk about that. That's why he's stuck with Yvette Gendry and Kenton Buckner. They have something that they can use for blackmail. In my opinion, there's no other way. Because you cannot let these two people be deputy chiefs and run a department like this. I strongly urge Chief Conrad to do something about it immediately. And I think we, the people, should demand that these cops, when they are put into these situations, if these charges are enough to have these guys indicted and taken off of their jobs and their police power suspended, then there's meat. They should not be getting paid. There should not be paid administrative leave for any government official who gets caught in wrongdoing. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. But if I had to lose 2 years' worth of income and counting because of these idiots, and I'm not alone, there's many, many people out there that ran through this. If we had to lose because of this, they should lose as well. Why should we lose our livelihood? Why should we lose our way of life? Why should we lose our dignity when we've done nothing wrong? And these guys get rewarded by not even missing a paycheck? And if this city is going ahead and saying that it's okay and agreeing to this crap in union contracts, then the unions need to go. Unions need to go. I believe in the rank and file union members. I always have. I've always said union leadership was the problem. But in this particular case, it's a coordinated problem that needs an immediate fix. It really, really does. And I am very disturbed by what's going on with LMPD, and I would hope that you would be too. You know, and it goes beyond that. I mean, let's look at this next one. It seems like government is intent on, you know, it's like the least smartest person, the ones with the lack of any common sense, are intent on getting elected, and we the fools elect them. You know, I don't know how to say that any better. You know, and we've got an interesting thing here today that just came out as well. Governor Steve Beshear has appointed Queenie Averett, a longtime Democratic Party activist, to fill the vacant position of Jefferson County Judge Executive. Now, we know that the judge executive is an elected constitutional office that has no pay and really no duties, nothing. It's basically, I'm a county judge executive, and I get to go around on my own dime and represent Jefferson County, you know, with all the other paid county judge executives across the state. It's interesting to me that Beshear picks a longtime Democratic Party activist insider, if you will, you know, and makes them this Jefferson County judge executive. Now, understanding that they have no duties, no pay, et cetera, at the same time, you know, I have to ask, is this a conflict of interest? I mean, think about it. Brian Matthews was caught in all kinds of wrongdoing. He gave that up because his good friend Councilman Dan Johnson, who is fighting bad checks and things now and fighting, you know, the law on that front, as well as Brian Matthews, Councilman Dan Johnson gave his good friend Brian Matthews a legislative assistant position, you know, basically fired his previous assistant. Of course, they said, well, they just lowered her hours. That's garbage. They basically made her non-existent because of their friendship. To me, that was dead wrong. So Matthews has had this dual role as county judge executive and a legislative assistant. So he gave up the county judge executive because it didn't pay any money. And being a legislative assistant for Dan Johnson pays him more money than the previous legislative assistant guy. So even though it's no job, no duties, no anything else, you know, you really have to sit here and ask yourself. The thing that stuck with me was the longtime Democrat Party activist. That's the way the Courier-Journal portrayed it. It's fascinating. It's fascinating because it just shows that, you know, you're going to reward people with even the most bogus of things. You know, as long as you're a member of the party, you're going to get an award, even if it's a title. Now, as the county judge executive, Queenie Averett is going to walk around and do anything she wants to do, and nobody's going to mess with her. That's just the way it is. You know, what's really interesting to me is, even though all the powers were stripped from the county judge executive because of merger in 2003, You know, what I really want to know now is, why do we even have that office in Jefferson County? We've been asking that for a long time. But if this is just nothing more than a show office, you know, then it's time to get rid of these people. We don't need this. It's like the county commissioners. We've got three county commissioners. Get rid of them. They're just another thing that they get stolen on a ballot that has no office, no powers, no duties, no responsibilities. So why was that constitutional office not done away with? Now, I understand that the county judge executive is a very important part of many counties, most counties around the state. I get that. Three positions, they do a job and everything else. But here in Jefferson County, why can't we just amend the Constitution? If we're not going to allow this county judge executive to do anything, and we're just going to give away these gravy appointments to act like we're really big and bad and think of stuff, then get rid of them. Get rid of them. We don't need them in Jefferson County. It's just one more thing. You know, moving on to some other news, I tell you, Alice in Wonderland Grimes is becoming more and more amusing. And I tell you why. There's at least seven polls out there, credible polls, including Survey USA and all the other ones, you know. These are credible polls. And what I mean by credible poll, whether you agree with the polls or not, and I don't really agree with a lot of polls in most cases, because all polls are the questions are all designed to bring you to to bring you to a logical conclusion to fit their needs. But we have seven public polls that show Alice in Wonderland Grimes trailing Mitch McConnell anywhere between 4 and 8 points, depending on which poll that you want to listen to, which one you want to believe. It's fascinating to me because each one of these polls always give you the information, the poll results across the board, but they also give you a list of the questions, you know, and the areas that were covered in the poll, you know, a breakdown of who's asked the questions in the poll, everything. I mean, these are legit, right? But amazingly, we mentioned this late last week, Mark Melman is an internal pollster for Grimes. And he actually went on a conference call and said that Alison Grimes has the newest of advantages at this moment. I tell you, I find that extremely funny because, you know, this to me is just to the point of being laughable. Mark Melman says that this is essentially a tied race. We all know that's not true. He has not released any amounts of polling data whatsoever. We have not seen the list of questions. We have not seen the breakdown of those that were polled. None of that. You know, but all of a sudden she's posing in a tie, and according to Jonathan Hirsch, Grimes' campaign manager, you know, he admitted that they released these numbers in an effort to kind of, you know, make the other polls not look so significant. But, you know, he said these polls weren't affecting Grimes' fundraising, which is really what it's all about anyway. And, you know, he said he trusts Mark Melman's numbers implicitly. I don't know how you can trust something you know nothing about. Paul, how are you, sir?
Good evening. You just touched upon a subject that punched one of my buttons, lad.
That's
metro form of government.
Yeah.
You are advocating that the positions of county judge executive and county commissioners be done away with constitutionally. Well, the only problem
in
with
Jefferson
that
County.
Is that you cannot, Ed, you can't do that. That's just it. You cannot do that in Kentucky. It's not possible. It's all or none. You have to do them all or none. Okay. Jefferson County was carved out an exception for this particular form of metro government as a direct result of a constitutional amendment. So I don't believe that any other counties have adopted Jefferson County's form of government, and there's a good reason for that, and that is it's a terribly bloated government in spite of the fact that all the proponents way back when kept telling us, the gullible public, and by the way, I exclude myself from that group because I wasn't buying it for a minute, that they were going to achieve all sorts of efficiencies with the combined government operations. Well, those efficiencies have simply never materialized, and in fact, they keep adding positions. at inflated prices. So, the Louisville Jefferson County form of metro government is a disaster. It is a disaster.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It's one of the things we were talking last week. We need to recall merger and get this stuff divided again. But in the absence of that, I know that you're right constitutionally as far as being able to eliminate that in Jefferson County alone. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what's it going to take to spark enough people to recall this damn merger and fix us the way it should be. I mean, we're spending more money now on one government as a central government, if you will, which was the basis of selling merger to the people, was by combining resources and combining governments, we were going to save money. We're spending more on one government than we were with two, and the county is being completely ignored.
Just
what,
like
what
it was before.
And the
reason the county... The people outside of what is now called the Urban Services District, which was formerly known as the City of Louisville, and legally is still the only city of Louisville that exists in Kentucky, the metro form of government has successfully stripped away from those of us out here in the county area, the unincorporated area, all sorts of wonderful assets. We lost the Southfield Training Center. A lot of surplus land that belonged to Jefferson County has since been sold off, or in many cases, flat-ass given away to the Metropolitan Sewer District, okay? And the Metropolitan Sewer District has not altered their behavior in terms of not increasing rates, but, you know, they're getting this free land, and they're treating us worse than they did before. So
yeah, so it's nothing more than a money and land grab. That's all it was.
That's correct. That is correct. Now, we do have an alternative that is allowed by the Kentucky Constitution, and in fact, there's another form of government that actually would mirror a bigger city in California called San Diego. San Diego runs their city with one mayor and eight metro council people. Their council has only eight people, and they have they've got 1.5 million people in approximately the same number of square miles as Jefferson County. So they've got twice the number of people, and they're operating at council people. We have a bloated government of 26 council people, each of them establishing their own fiefdom. All right?
And the reason that they did that was to make sure that they could get merger passed. They promised all of these positions and everything else to bloat the government so that they could get merger passed. We know this.
So here we have had since the merged government, and it's only the merged government. It is not the City of Louisville and the County of Jefferson merged. Like many, there are some metropolitan areas around that merged their city and county totally and officially, like Jacksonville, Florida. But that was done quite a while ago. But we are not one big happy family. We are not. The leaders of this city have sold us a bill of goods, and the vast majority of people that I talk with are unaware that the City of Louisville that existed before merger is the same City of Louisville that exists now. So a solution, according to the Kentucky Constitution, is to use not the county judge and commissioner form of government, which we had. We used to have that. One county judge and three commissioners, okay?
Right.
And the commissioners were elected countywide. We have available a county judge magistrate form of government available that huge numbers of Kentucky counties use, and they use it quite successfully and quite effectively. The magistrates are elected from only within their magisterial district, like the Metro Council right now. So if people like the fact that they want to elect their representatives from someone who genuinely lives in the district, then the magisterial form of government would be that way to go, and we would still have a county judge. Okay, so we actually have an opportunity. And the Kentucky Constitution, God love it, limits the number of magistrates in any county in Kentucky to eight.
Okay? I'm glad you went there, because we've actually talked about
26. Not 26 like this bloated metro government, but eight, just like San Diego, who's a bigger city and in the same amount of land, and they manage just fine. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, that's the thing. We have talked about San Diego repeatedly on this show as a comparison because of the landmass situation and the fact that they do have twice our population, or almost twice our population. But, you know, we've looked at all of that a lot. But what is it about the people here who aren't getting that message? I mean, why are we, the people, continuing to be led down this doomsday thing like we're being led? I mean, the county before, you know, we could do anything in the county we wanted to do. I mean, if you want to compare, you know, Jefferson County used to be a fairly cheap place to live. It really did overall. You know, we could compare it to something like maybe a Bullock County, because Bullock County is taking a hell of a lot of jobs, and I know a lot of people are moving to Bullock County in droves right now. I know quite a few friends of mine who have lived here their whole life that are my age or older that said, to hell with it, they're moving to Bullock County. They've actually put their houses for sale and bought another one in Bullock County. So, I mean, that's the thing. This form of government clearly is not working for everybody. It's clearly not working for anybody outside of the urban services district. And yet every dime that is brought in tax money is given mainly to the urban services district or MSD or any of the other variety of the Democrats' pet projects, you know, and that's a serious concern. And when you look at the breakdown of the Metro Council, I mean, let's be real here. You've got 26 council members, and 17 of them are one party. They have the supermajority rule anytime they want it. It's all Democratic power.
But see, Ed, there's not a whole lot that can be done about the partisanship unless you go to a nonpartisan form of government. Lexington, Kentucky, the second largest city in Kentucky, has a nonpartisan form of government. They don't
see that's where
party,
I was headed.
And they're okay.
That's where I was headed.
That is also available. But see, that's also available under the magistrate form of government as well. You can go with a nonpartisan county government on that, okay? Now, you hit upon a tremendously important item that a lot of folks aren't aware of. When the city of Louisville applies for federal grants, for example, to do whatever, and there was a federal grant application that was approved about 3 years ago that James Peden brought to light, and the federal grant had to do with providing money to tear down crappy abandoned houses that were problems and eyesores. Okay, that particular federal government program only awarded money to cities. It was only for cities. And this is really important, folks. The money was only for cities. So when the city of Louisville got that money, James Peden repeatedly asked the law department and the Jefferson County Attorney's Office, why couldn't that money be used, say, out in Fern Creek or Valley Station,
right,
or Prospect, the Prospect area in the unincorporated areas? And the county attorney's representative, Bill O'Brien, would not come right out and say the fact that the city of Louisville is only entitled to that money, not the unincorporated part of Jefferson County. And Councilman Peden tried his darndest to get that county attorney to say that, and he refused to say it. But the fact is that I received a letter prior to that meeting from the Jefferson County Attorney's Office, which clearly states, and I'm going to paraphrase it, that the boundaries that existed prior to merger for the city of Louisville were the same boundaries that existed when I got that letter 3 years ago. Same boundaries, and nothing has changed since then. So they know, all the people in the know, all the leaders, and the vast majority of them are hacks of the Democrat Party, the vast majority of them, they all know that when federal government comes in for the city of Louisville, it is only going to be used in the urban services district. And the rest of us out here in the unincorporated areas and in the small cities, we can just kiss their ass and go pound sand, because we're not going to see $1 of that used in our areas to solve the problems that we have. Not $1 will come out here. Not $1.
Oh, that's exactly true. I understand all that. And that's what I'm trying to get at here, is because we continue allowing this substandard situation. Now the city of Louisville, you know, the people that are in the urban services district, I'm sure they love it because they get everything taken care of for them. You know, but out in the county, I mean, we continue having to fight for anything and everything we can get. I mean, if you look at the people who actually do take a chance on getting out here in the county and trying to open a business. You know, I mean, let's look at one of your favorite chicken places out on Dixie Highway that opened. You know who I'm talking about. You know, they came out here and they were forced into all kinds of absurd requests and requirements just to build. Just to build. You know, they had to put in extra curbs, they had to put in extra parking, they had to do all these different things that aren't required anywhere else. But because the city of Louisville didn't want to do their job and pay for certain parts of this road project they're responsible for, they force it onto them. So that increases your cost. So the chances of you wanting to come into Jefferson County to do business are slim, because even if you get a cheaper tax rate per se as compared to being in the urban services district, your upfront costs are even greater. And that forces a lot of people to go to Bullock County, which is why Bullock County is thriving right now. We're going to take a quick break, Paul. When we get back, stick around with us, man. I want to hear from you for a while. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we get back, we're going to get in a little bit more, because I think you're going to love it going forward. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Abuse of power, that's no plan. I'm the enemy, because I like to think. I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sit in a greasy spoon and wonder, gee, should I have the T-bone steak or the jumbo rack of barbecue ribs with a side order of gravy fries? I want high cholesterol. I want to eat bacon and butter and buckets of cheese, okay? I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati in a non-smoking session. I want to run through the streets naked with green jello all over my body reading Playboy magazine. Why? Because I suddenly might feel the need to, okay, pal? I've seen this future. You know what it is? It's a 47-year-old virgin sitting around in his beige pajamas drinking a banana broccoli steak thinking I'm an Oscar Mayer wiener.
I love that clip. That's from the Demolition Man. I tell you, Paul, you know, when we look at all the things that are going on, the path that we're being led down, and this merger has clearly over the last 11 years really made it worse. I still cannot grasp why the people continue to allow it. You know, we were talking off air. You tell everybody what you were telling me off air about the population.
Well, there's two things related to the population. Going to your immediate question of why do people continue to let it happen, I think part of the reason, quote, people allow it to continue, unquote, is simply because they don't know the power that they have. Numerous national polls over the last decade have identified that the vast majority of voters out there are independents in their thinking, okay, and in their behavior. They're independents. 40%. Now, that again, outstrips both the Democrats and the Republicans across the board. They both come in somewhere in the 30% range. So the independent thinking people have more power to sway things than what they actually use. Okay, here in Jefferson County, we have another demographic statistic that is unbelievably revealing, and that is the city of Louisville, also known as the Urban Services District, according to the last census survey, was somewhere right around, or I think slightly under, 200,000 people. Well, the rest of the county has 500,000 people. So those of us out here in the unincorporated part of Jefferson County, we outnumber the city folks 2.5 to 1 or 5 to 2. Take your pick. But if we out here in the county ever wanted to push an issue, if we wanted to change the government, if we wanted to get the taxes under control, if we wanted to rein in this out-of-control, terribly wasteful disaster of a local government called Louisville Metro, we have the power to do that because we outnumber them 5 to 2. 5 to 2.
You know, we're really
the power. So,
but you see, I mean, the problem for me is this. The problem for me is because those numbers are exactly right, and you used to work with the Census Bureau, so, I mean, you know exactly what you're doing here. But, you know, the problem for me is this. When you look at the unincorporated part of Jefferson County, when you look at Jefferson County, the unincorporated Jefferson County as a whole, and you look at the people that are elected to represent Jefferson County, I mean, we're still electing Democrats who go along with the program and everything that the mayor, Jim King, says. So they're not really representing the county interest as well as they should, are they? So why are we still electing Democrats?
But Ed, here in the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, even the whole idea of representative government has really taken a back seat to keeping political parties in the driver's seat. That's the only thing that political parties want, and when they get in government, that's what they do. You just mentioned a story with Dan Johnson hiring one of his buddies and replacing someone who was a Democrat Party loyalist. I mean, how else did that L.A. ever get the job? You know, you only get an L.A. job is if you are a party ass kisser, okay? So here they chose someone else over this other person who had been a Democrat Party loyalist. It goes to show you they don't care about the individuals. They don't care about the city. They don't care about anything except getting their own way and keeping their political hacks in positions of power. That's all they care about. So some of that, because of that attitude, I think it has taken somewhat of a toll on the population at large. It's kind of beaten some folks down because they throw up their hands and they basically say, there's nothing that I, as an individual, can do about it. I can't change it. I don't like it, but I can't change it.
And that's exactly it. That's what partisan politics has done to us. The parties have done a great job of dividing us and beating us down. And this is a uniparty at work here. It's not just the Democrats. That's a Republican mantra, too. You know, and that's the thing. But what I'm saying is if we have the power, we outnumber everything 2.5 to 1 as far as the people are concerned, and we have the power, what's it going to take to get Jefferson County to get excited enough to say, screw it? If we can't recall a merger right now, we can certainly at the next election replace these damn Democrats on the council. Why is it that the people in Jefferson County aren't understanding that, you know, these representatives, I know we're beaten down, but how much further do we have to be beat before we rise up?
Well, it's like any other major change in any society. If you look back through history, the situation usually gets pretty dire before population says enough's enough. Okay. But I'm going to tell you this, on the good news side is that We're pretty far down that road, okay? We're pretty far down that road, getting closer and closer to the day where the population at large will say collectively, we've had enough of this crap. We're not taking it anymore. You played that sound clip from what was that movie from that you played?
Demolition.
At the top of the show, what was that? We're not going to take it anymore.
Okay. Yeah, Mad as
Network.
Hell, yeah.
Yeah.
And
that was the sentiment way back when that particular movie came out, which I think was in the 70s. Okay. Well, that's been a long time ago. And things were pretty good there for a while after that movie came out because there was a lot of social change going on and a lot of government change. Well, we are sliding back into the very same scenario and situation that preceded that particular movie being made. We are. So, I'm optimistic about, ultimately, I believe there will be some type of major change here in Jefferson County. All right. And then third and lastly, let me just leave you with this thought on this whole Jefferson County mess.
Okay.
If I were in charge of if I had a leadership position in either business or government in the Kentucky counties of Hardin, Spencer, Oldham, Bullitt, Meade, and Breckinridge, and in the Indiana counties of Floyd, Harrison, and Clark, I would be busting my butt to attract businesses and residents from Jefferson County, because I think we will see an exodus before we see an uprising. People will not continue to be gouged and treated unfairly in a metropolitan area like this metro government is doing, and they're doing it with the complete cooperation of the Metro Council, both the Republicans and the Democrats. So we will see an exodus of people who've got the money, who've got the means. They're going to leave. The people who will be left behind and the ones who will be moving in are the folks who don't have the money and don't have the means, and Louisville will become the Detroit of Kentucky.
Well, I think we're already fast approaching that, because I think the exodus has already begun. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I talk to every day who have already begun the process of leaving Jefferson County. And who can blame them? And when you look at business and stuff, I mean, let's look at Bullitt County just in the last 10 years, the booming business they've got going on. And as far as southern Indiana is concerned, I mean, that's the master plan, isn't it? I mean, that's why we had to go crazy creating this East End Bridge and kissing everybody's butt with the Drummond Art Estate, which is a bogus historical property. But the fact of the matter is that our own mayor, his bread and butter business is in southern Indiana. This East End Bridge is going to make it even better and easier for southern Indiana to grow.
Isn't that just great? Is that the mayor of the city of Louisville and the metro government has decided for tax purposes and business purposes, it is smarter to operate in southern Indiana. And that says it all. That's just like Jefferson County public school teachers who opt to put their children in private schools instead of public schools. That says it all right there.
I think so, too. And I tell you, everything reflects leadership. But I tell you, I was actually going to talk about a national story with Harry Reid, but you just mentioned schools, and I really want to put this out there because this is disturbing to me. We have all kinds of things going on in these schools, and we have a very conflicting point going on today. We were actually going to cover it tomorrow. We'll just switch a few things around. But California's Ventura High School, the principal of California's Ventura High School banned the Football Booster Club from selling any Chick-fil-A sandwiches as a fundraiser because he was scared people might be offended. And he didn't do this because he was worried about the nutrition content. No. Principal Val Wyatt at California's Ventura High School banned Chick-fil-A sold sandwiches by the Football Booster Club because of politics. His answer was that with the Chick-fil-A's political stance on gay rights, because the students of Ventura High School and their parents would be at the event, I don't want them on campus. So here we go. We've got a high school. Now, here's the thing. The local Chick-fil-A franchise has always supported the school district. They give them thousands and thousands of dollars. The Chick-fil-A franchise owner, Robert Schaefer, even offered to give the Booster Club 200 meals for a back-to-school event, in which they expected to raise $1,600 for the football team. That's a lot of money for a high school football team. It would have all went to the football program, uniforms, food, to the players. That was a way to pay for all that, so nobody had to be charged for the football players. But before that went out, the principal decided that she wanted to go ahead and say no because Chick-fil-A wasn't going to be allowed on campus because somebody might be offended. Now, I don't know how in the hell anybody can justify that. This is all over Chick-fil-A's stance on gay marriage. the ownership of Chick-fil-A has always, you know, been public that they believe in a traditional family. Marriage should be between a man and a woman. There's never been any dispute over that. And they came into the limelight because everybody was trying to say that Chick-fil-A was refusing to give any kind of contraceptive coverage to their employees on a medical plan, which was not true. The only thing they were
which
really trying
lie.
To stop,
it was a lie.
Sure, and the mainstream liberal media pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and promoted the lie knowing it was a lie, and they did it anyway for a political agenda, so you can't trust the mainstream media, clearly. But, you know, what does this do for the school? What does this do for the students? Give me your answer on that, and then I'm going to give you a different story. Go ahead.
Well, you've pretty much made the point is that here we now have the ugly, dirty, filthy, tasteful business of politics is now part of the curriculum in our schools. Now, this is not anything new. There have been many, many pundits over the last 10 to 20 years decrying the fact that the teachers in the classroom are, in fact, nothing more than parrots and robots for the liberal agenda. They're pushing that. And this principle is simply demonstrating just how far that's gone. Now, before your listeners think, well, that's only in California, and California people, well, they're kind of different anyway. Let me bring this to the table. Jefferson County, Kentucky, Fairdale High School. The principal over there, and by the way, our school board member, Linda Duncan, used to teach over there, both, and she's a Democrat. Though that school has been regularly, for quite a while, announcing making announcements over their PA system, and I'm not sure how often they do it, but they're recruiting high schoolers to go and put yard signs and political signs out. Oh, that's right. Only for Democrat candidates. Only for Democrat candidates.
Isn't that amazing?
All right. There's a guy by the name of Ron Weston, whose brother was, I think, principal over there at one time. And
Ron
certainly
Weston
during
got ran
his
out of
run,
politics for a reason. And I won't name that lady's name. Go ahead.
But while he was in politics, though, he had his brother. I think his brother's name was Brad. Brad and a lot of the school staff over there actively recruited high schoolers to go put yard signs out. Okay, and they did it under the guise of a civics lesson, hey, here's a chance to learn how the government operates. But, you know, they only did it for Democrat candidates. Isn't that amazing? Okay.
Oh, it's amazing.
So the fact that the Democrat agenda and the liberal agenda, which in many people's eyes is one and the same, okay, the fact that we've got this recent story out of California demonstrating it, you know, that's not unprecedented in Kentucky, and certainly in Jefferson County, that type of thinking in the schools has been around for more than 10 years. More than 10 years. So it's here. It's here now. It's been here a while. And if your school hasn't had it yet, you'll get it.
Yeah, it's coming. And here's the flip side of that. Here's the other part of the liberal agenda. If that didn't shock you at all, and it probably didn't. I mean, you know, the liberal agenda is a liberal agenda, right? This story should shock the hell out of you and scare the hell out of anybody in public schools. There are images coming out of a classroom in Jacksonville, Florida. A group of sixth graders, 11 and 12-year-olds, are being taught how to use strap-on dildos. You heard me right. They're being taught how to use strap-on dildos as part of the Common Core subjects, which includes sex ed. It's disturbing. This teacher was actually caught. I'm not a big fan of having cell phones in school. In this case, I'm glad there was one. One of the students had a cell phone camera there, so he started taking pictures of this teacher, showing how to use a strap-on in a number of different positions. I mean, one of these images, and I'm going to go ahead and put that link in the chat room for you guys because it's got some images there for you. But one of these images, I mean, not only did she pull the dildo out in the middle of class, all right, not only did she pull the dildo out in the middle of class, then she showed everybody how to put the strap-on on. Then she even laid down on the desk, put her butt in the air and her legs over her head and use the strap on to show them where it's supposed to be inserted at and how to insert it. And then she showed him how to wear the harness that you attach the strap on to. It's Clinton Middle School in Duval County, Florida. 39-year-old sex ed teacher Sharon Mercer. You know, and the school is acting like it was no big deal. She has since been suspended. The school refuses to comment, but it's not like the school didn't know this was going on. There's no way in hell this just happened one time and all of a sudden, you know, it's going public. It went public because one kid was disturbed by it and had the sense to take pictures. You know, and Mercer, of course, the teacher.
Did that kid get suspended? Did the kid get suspended
you know
by
what?
Any chance?
They never said that. They never said. But the teacher, Sharon Mercer, 39-year-old teacher Sharon Mercer, claimed that she was suspended as an act of bigotry because she's a proud member of the LGBTQ community. So this teacher is trying to say she was suspended from class because she's lesbian and proud of it. You know, and she's in class teaching 11- and 12-year-olds how to insert a dildo and how to put it on. You know, this is part of your Common Core, folks. This is sex ed under Common Core. Common Core standards have been used to do nothing more than promote a liberal agenda. You know, it's okay to be gay. It's okay to be this. It's okay to be that. I don't care what your sexuality is as an adult. I don't care what you do behind closed doors. Put a strap on and use the doorknob for all I care. I really, truly don't. It's not my business as an adult. But to think that we're going to be able to allow stuff like this to be brought into our middle school, 11- and 12-year-old kids, and this is supposedly teaching an alternative sexual lifestyle, this is very common in many states under Common Core. This is disturbing. What do you think, Paul? Go ahead.
Well, I think this is illustrative of one of the greatest hypocrisies of liberalism, and it's probably the premier hypocrisy. All these folks who espouse any version of liberalism that you want to define, they go around mouthing the words that they are tolerant and they believe in diversity, okay, that they're tolerant.
Yep.
That makes them superior people in their minds because they are so tolerant and they believe in diversity, okay? But yet we continue to get stories even this year where a child went to school and had to do some type of report, and the report involved reporting this child's report chose to use the Bible as the reference source. And that child, as I recall, and the details are a little sketchy, as I recall, that child was shouted down by the teacher when the teacher realized what was going on, was not allowed to finish the report, and in fact was not graded on that report, and the child had to do a second report that didn't involve anything like the Bible. Now, where is the inclusiveness and the tolerance in that kind of behavior? The liberal agenda only wants people who agree with their point of view, and with them, they will be tolerant and inclusive. But should you express in any form or fashion something that contradicts or opposes their point of view, they will shut you down. They will assassinate your character. They will run you off the grounds if they can. If they can, they will do that. And, Ed, you know, that is indicative of the same type of mentality that has happened many, many, many times over the course of human history. And that type of mentality is existing today over in Asia, in the Middle East. It's a form of fanaticism, okay, when you have everyone believing that they're doing this for the goal, whatever the goal is, okay. The fanaticism that I'm talking about is the Islamic fanaticism that has now resulted in the beheading of people who had nothing to do with the grievances that these fanatics have. That's where that leads. And any listener who is a fanatic of liberal ideology, you're on that road, you're on that path. You may not use a knife to behead somebody, but you will go out of your way to assassinate someone's character all in the name of achieving the liberal ideology goal.
Well, that's very true, and that is the most disturbing part of all. I mean, you know, we are sitting here allowing this crap. You know, I just don't understand it. I don't guess I'll ever understand it. But this
is
Common Core in the schools, and I tell you, go ahead.
That actually, Ed, that's in terms of you saying that we're allowing it, I will, maybe for the first time this year, agree with your use of that phrase. I agree with you on that because that is an individual choice. We as individuals have to decide whether we allow it or whether we take steps to try to neutralize it or in some cases try to eliminate it. We can certainly eliminate it from our own personal lives and our own family. Okay, we can neutralize it by having the courage to do verbal sparring with some of these fanatics. These fanatics are remarkably easy to shut down. They're remarkably easy because they don't want to hear the facts. They don't. Shut them down on one fact. They want
to
bring in something else that's not relevant.
There has to be. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's just we've got a long way to go because, I mean, clearly when we have fallen this far, I mean, even in Arizona, they had a school district, I think it was last year, you know, Arizona ended up having to ban a Common Core approved book because the book had, you know, sexually explicit passages that talked about bondage and stuff. This isn't a school subject. You know, we have allowed this, you know, I guess our good friend Dale Gillespie uses the term public indoctrination camps, and that's exactly what I believe has happened.
That's a good way to describe it.
I think he's right.
That's a good one.
I think he's right.
Good description.
Because these public schools have become public indoctrination camps, and it's very disturbing that this is where we've ended up. Where it's going to lead, I don't know. I do know this, though. We're out of time, man. Any final thoughts, Paul?
No, yeah, just keep on fighting, keeping on. You're fighting a good fight. Some of your allies are fighting the good fight. Dale's fighting the good fight. Your guy Michon, he's fighting the good fight. He's got a number of warriors in his camp. That's all we can do. We can fight the good fight and hold these people as accountable as we can on every time we get a chance. And unfortunately, we have a target-rich environment, which means we could easily get overwhelmed with opportunities to go fight the good fight and hold them accountable. So we have to, because of our limited resources, we have to do a job of being selective and careful and only going after those targets that we believe we can win and with little resources. So, but they're out there. There's plenty. You've done it. I've done it. There's bunches of people that are doing it.
There are a lot of us, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much for calling in. You know, folks, I tell you, it just gets more disturbing. As Paul says, it's a target-rich environment for content. It's a target-rich environment, and you can always fight the good fight. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's a few of us, and we're way underfunded. Now, I know that sounds like a money hit, and you know, that's one thing I don't do is push for money. But, you know, a lot of us really do need help. We need it right here. That's what the donate button is on the LouisvillePolitics.com website for. You know, we are going to have to start because the targets are getting larger and larger. But our ability to fight them and go after this target-rich environment resource-wise is getting smaller and smaller. It's having to be spread out too far. You know, I am disturbed. When Common Core thinks that it's okay to teach bondage in public schools, when it thinks it's okay to use strap-on dildos with a teacher, and that's acceptable, when you see what's going on in our public school system, it's very disturbing. One thing I always talk about, and I said it at the top of this show, that attitude reflects leadership. Clearly, our leadership in this country has failed. It has failed on both sides. On both sides. It has failed because we have allowed this progressive, socialist, liberal agenda to trickle down and dominate everything, including our education system. But the big story of the day is stuff like Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, Kim Kardashian, what's she doing today? You know, we have become this reality TV, always worried about everybody else, that we continue to forget and we continue to allow all the crap that these so-called leaders are doing to us. Every decision they make affects your daily life. What Kim Kardashian does today does not affect me at all. What Ray Rice did to his then-fiancée, now-wife, is between him and his wife and the law. That doesn't affect me. You know, if we're going to continue down this reality TV kind of mindset, I'm kind of curious. To the people who think that this Ray Rice incident with Janae Thomas was so, so bad, all right, and we've got a ton of them. We've got a ton of them. You know, as a matter of fact, all the liberals in the Senate, 16 U.S. senators, all women, you know, are actually saying that this is just crazy. That, you know, they have sent a letter to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, you know, to institute a real zero-tolerance policy for domestic violence and abuse that's going to stop this. It has no place in the NFL. 16 women U.S. senators decided to send a letter like that to Roger Goodell. Fair enough. I agree with them. We should never have any kind of tolerance. There should always be a zero-tolerance policy for domestic violence and abuse. It has no place anywhere, not just the NFL, ladies. And what's really disturbing to me here, though, is where were these females? Where were all these females who were standing up and saying, oh, Ray Rice is a piece of garbage and a piece of scum, and this should never be tolerated? Where were they when their favorite president, Bill Clinton, was doing the same thing? Where were they when Bill Clinton was raping Juanita Broderick? You guys thought it was going to go to Monica Lewinsky, didn't you? Whatever you think morally of Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky, the fact of the matter is Monica Lewinsky agreed to that, and she was an adult by the law. Sick? Yes. Manipulated? Yes. But Bill Clinton lied under oath, and that was acceptable. He committed perjury, and that was acceptable. But nobody thinks about Juanita Broderick. Juanita Broderick was a Clinton campaign worker back when he was running for Attorney General of Arkansas. Broderick came forward during the impeachment of Bill Clinton and after the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. He gave an interview in which she described him raping her. And you know what? Nobody cared. She told him, no, please don't do that. And he kept on going. She said, I'm married. This is something I'm not interested in. And he kept on going. She did everything she could. When she told him not to kiss her, he bit her lip. Then he forced her down on the bed. And he wouldn't stop. She said he was a vicious, awful person at that moment. And he was biting her, tore her skirt, tore her pantyhose. When he got done, straightened up, he left and told her she needed to put some ice on her lip. But hey, we've got 16 Democratic U.S. senators who are female that didn't have anything to worry about then. Now I realize it's been some time ago, but some of those people were still in office then. Where were they when Bill Clinton was raping Juanita Broderick? And you think I care about Ray Rice? Folks, it's time to get your head out of your ass. It's time to grow up and hold these elected leaders accountable. Do not continue to let them destroy America, starting with our youth in school. It is disturbing. We cannot allow the police state to continue. LMPD is having way too many problems. It's time to take all of that back. We, the people, have the power. So why are we not exercising it? And that's the question I'll leave you with today. Dale the Truth will be here tomorrow night for the Tuesday Night Truth Show, as always, right here. And I will return Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, as usual. And we'll get into a whole host of other things. In the meantime, folks, you guys have a great night, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.